Okay, well, for those, we've got some visiting, but for those who have not been with us, we're going through some of the ages of the Bible, and we are in the captivity time frame. We're talking about the 70 years of captivity. We had gotten into the book of Daniel and talked a little bit about Daniel's period. We talked a little bit about that period of time, the 70 years, and that how the captivity really occurred during three significant times. And so, you know, to not get bogged down in the book of Daniel, which there's a lot of great stories in Daniel, but I think a lot of us are familiar with those, I thought we would maybe spend a little more time in Ezekiel. We will hit some of the high points just to kind of close out Daniel, but the main thing I wanted to spend some time in would be Ezekiel. In Daniel, you know, we've got the high points that we would be very familiar with, where Daniel was interpreting Belshazzar's dream. And then we have chapter 6. We talked a little bit about God's protection there. We know that chapter 7 and 8 was where the vision of Belshazzar occurred. And then chapter 9 was talking about the vision that in the time of Darius. And then 10 through 12 was a lot of the reign of King Cyrus. And so, like I say, I didn't want to spend a lot of time, but if we go back into Daniel, there was a couple things I do want to hit just before we get into Ezekiel. And that is, you know, in Nebuchadnezzar's dream, or the interpretation of that, in chapter 2, there's something that's said here that I wanted to just pause for a little bit and get some input on. So I'm in Daniel chapter 2, and verse 30 says, and I'll just back up to verse 29, it says, "As for you, O king, thoughts came to your mind while on your bed about what would come to pass after this. And he who reveals secrets has made known to you what will be." And we know that up to this point, God had helped him, you know, with this revelation of the dream. But verse 30, it says, "But as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me, because I have more wisdom than anyone living. But for our sakes who make known the interpretation of the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart." So, of course, this is Daniel here. What do you think is meant by when he says that it's not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living? Did Daniel really at that time have more wisdom than anyone living?
No, he's saying that he doesn't.
So explain.
The dream was revealed to him.
Yeah, and who was making this relevant? My point being is that when God was working with Daniel and his three friends, you know, to help him do the things he was doing, and when he excelled far above everyone else, you know, we have this verse here, and I think that's important. Mike's make the point. He knows that all of the things that he was able to do at that time was purely because of God and what God was blessing him to be able to do. The other thing is, of course, we come to chapter 3. We've got this neat story about the fiery furnace. Of course, we know how that went. You know, when you think about Nebuchadnezzar here, you know, do you get the picture that he was a lover of his people? Was he in it for his own people? No. What was he willing to do to his own people if they couldn't even help do what he wanted? He's going to kill them. And, you know, I think that's interesting fact that, you know, his wise men, his magicians, his astrologers, you know, he makes a statement, "If you're not able to interpret this dream for me, then I will, you know, kill you." And just gives you a little bit of insight to what type of person he was. Of course, in that story, we have the fourth person, or the angel, if you will, that appeared, which was neat in that story. And then, like I said, in chapter 4, we have Nebuchadnezzar's dream, a second dream. And then, again, I just wanted to hit the high points. We've already talked a little bit about Daniel. We've been thoroughly through that book before, so I don't want to get too bogged down. But I do think if we were to shore up that book and talk about some lessons learned from Daniel, I want to pause there for a minute. You know, number one is that you look at Nebuchadnezzar and you look at the troubles that Nebuchadnezzar had. You know, here he was a ruler used by God, for sure, and he saw a lot of various things. He saw a lot of miraculous things through Daniel, and of course, we know that he was a witness firsthand to what he saw with Daniel's three friends. So even in the midst of all of those things that were going on, he saw God's power, he saw his sovereignty, and yet, and there were stern warnings. But what did Nebuchadnezzar choose to do? He still never, yeah. So you think about those things, and I see a lot of heads shaking. It's easy for us to read these stories and think, well, how silly. He saw these things firsthand. We read of these things firsthand. We see of God's power. We know what he's capable of doing. And yet, you know, it's not enough for, as Nebuchadnezzar, he acknowledged God. But did he do what God wanted him to do? And we know the answer is no. And so that's a huge lesson for us. And that is that, you know, what God instructs us to do, we must do. We can't just acknowledge him. We can't know him. We can't be like Nebuchadnezzar and see all those things happen and do nothing about it. But we've got to do it. So, yeah, Ben.
It just reminds me that faith isn't produced by seeing things.
Right.
We think that maybe we would benefit by, well, you know, if I could only see such and such. Well,
they saw these miracles.
Nebuchadnezzar, the children of Israel. You think about the Jews at the time of Christ. We think back and we think, how on earth could you see all of those things and then just write them off? But it happens time and time again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that visual for them apparently wasn't much stronger and didn't have that much more of an impact because they still chose not to. Yeah, Dwayne.
You know, all these things we're saying about Nebuchadnezzar. In verse 4, chapter 4, a great lesson for us. He said, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. That's how he felt about it.
Had it all.
Even though with all of these things, and he should have known. But that's a lesson to us that we don't want to get too at ease in our house.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely was comfortable and complacent, thought everything was fine.
Well, he lived in a different world than almost everyone.
Oh, else. Yeah.
He was his own God to himself.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when you have the power, when someone comes before you, you have the power to say, cut their head off, I don't like what they said to me, and it happens. And you have all the wealth, you have all the power.
Yeah, we don't really understand that. It's hard to...
You're totally consumed with yourself.
Yep.
And that follows what Mike is saying, because in Babylon and the Chaldean nation, their kings, they considered them deity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
On this, it seemed like Nebuchadnezzar was the one that was saying Daniel was the wisest in all the land. And, you know, he was attributing that to Daniel. And even when Daniel said it was revealed to him by God, he didn't seem to register that.
Yeah, no.
He just, you know, I've got this smart guy
working
for me, you know.
Yeah.
And he just ignored the fact that God was giving him that.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't see the bigger picture, did he? Good point. Okay, any other points about Daniel or any lessons that we... And that's what we're trying to do as we go through these ages, just pick the high points and find lessons that apply to us. Okay, so that brings us to Ezekiel. And we know that would have been the time of the later captives. We talked about those three times that the Jews were carried into Babylon. 606 BC or somewhere around there was when certain members of the royal family were carried off. Of course, that would have been Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we can read of this, and let's... we don't need to, because we have, but just to kind of make this point, let's go... Somebody that's still in Daniel, of course, we're handy anyway. Someone go to Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 6, and then someone else, 2 Kings 24 and 1. Daniel 1, 1 through 6, and then 2 Kings 24 through 1. Just read it when you get there.
Third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. So the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, and some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had the ability to serve in the king's palace, to whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. The king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Okay. And then somebody has 2 Kings 24:1.
In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years, and he turned and rebelled against him.
Okay. And we know that if we read that entire, or at least the first 17 verses there, you know, this is where we know that, of course, it talks about these skilled craftsmen that were carried off, priests and other leading people that were taken into captivity. Ezekiel would have been amongst probably that second group that was carried off. And then in 586, Jerusalem was destroyed, and that's when Nebuchadnezzar's army, you know, came through, and the rest of the Jews would have been taken. If we go to Jeremiah, well, we're not going to read it, Jeremiah 39, but while we're here in 2 Kings, well, it's a lot of verses there, but if we look at just 2 Kings chapter 25, the first 11 verses. Now it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the 10th month, on the 10th day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, all his army came against Jerusalem and camped against it. And they built a siege wall against it, it all around. So the city was besieged until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. By the ninth day of the 4th month, the famine had become so severe in the city that there was no food for the people of the land. Then the city wall was broken through, and all the men of war fled at night by the way of the gate between two walls, which was by the king's garden, even though the Chaldeans were still encamped all around against the city. And the king went by way of the plain. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king, and they overtook him in the plains of Jericho. All his army was scattered from him. So they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon at Riblah, and they pronounced judgment on him. Then they killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, put out the eyes of Zedekiah, bound him with bronze fetters, and took him to Babylon. Now in the 5th month, on the 7th day of the month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He burned the house of the Lord and the king's house, all the houses of Jerusalem, that is, all the houses of the great men, he burned with fire. And all the army of the Chaldeans who were with the captain of the guard broke down the walls of Jerusalem all around. Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive the rest of the people who remained in the city and the defectors who had deserted the king of the Babylon with the rest of the multitude. And I'll just stop there. But, you know, he carried away the rest of the people who remained in the city. So we have that, I guess you'd say, there was a small group that probably remained in the land, but you know that 2 Kings there in 25 talks about the last group that was carried off.
That next verse said that they left some of the poor people.
Yeah, there would have been a small group left behind. I probably cut it one short. You know, the book of Ezekiel, if you, I guess just to kind of hit some of the high points of that, you know, it's got a lot of figurative language in it. There's a lot of signs, and I don't know, the language is a little bit different. I don't know exactly what the best way to describe it is, but there's a lot of symbols and signs that are describing you know, what was going on. There's a lot of key phrases that you come across in Ezekiel, which kind of helps bring about a theme, I guess you would say. You know, Ezekiel is called the Son of Man. It seems like over 100 times in this book you read that. There's a phrase, the word of the Lord came to me. We see that a lot. Another phrase that comes to mind is that, and you shall know I am the Lord. We see that over and over. Of course, it's interesting, you know, as we've gone through Jeremiah, there's a lot of those same similar things that we see over and over and over. But those are some of the phrases that appear a lot. If we were to try to give purposes for Ezekiel writing this book, you know, what things might jump out to you? What would be some of the reasons that Ezekiel, that this book was written?
Well, he's probably going to comfort his brethren that are in captivity, for one thing.
Okay, that's good. Definitely some comfort or encouragement that was going on. What else was happening, much like what Jeremiah was doing?
Well, there was a lot of opposition to the truth as far as the prophetic truth that Jeremiah was teaching. You know, they wanted to kill him. And in the book of Ezekiel, he pretty well lays it out that we are to warn the people of the world about God's plan. And if they don't hear, you know. But if we fail to warn, we're in the same boat as they are.
Okay. And, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the big differences in him and Jeremiah probably was that Jeremiah was told things by God
directly.
Not that he didn't see, I can't specifically think of a vision that he saw, but Ezekiel saw visions and revelations like John did in mm-hmm. the book of Revelation. And God communicated differently to him and some of the other prophets.
Yeah.
Not all of them.
Yeah, okay. That's good. So, you know, and I just put down the people of Judah, and it's kind of what Dad said, needed to fully understand why they were in captivity. I mean, you take that for granted, but the need for them to turn from their idolatrous worship and turn back to worshiping God was the whole point. I mean, that was the entire intent, and they needed to understand what they were going to need to correct if they were going to turn back to God. And before they could return to their homeland, you know, there was this obvious misnomer that this was not going to be that big a deal. They were going to return quickly, I think some of them thought. And that wasn't the case. You know, Ezekiel was obviously truly God's spokesperson. And it was, you know, you might say, I mean, we look at Jeremiah and you think, well, that was in a time of need. But you talk about a deep, dark, desperate time when Ezekiel was talking to his people. This was about as dark as it was going to be. What are you going to say?
And then he continues on and kind of closes it out. He goes the full cycle here, and he gives us some good messianic predictions and some have heart.
Yeah.
Here's what's coming. There's going to be a happy state later, brighter days than the Messiah.
And didn't we see that? You know, we've talked about that a lot with Jeremiah. You know, he would doom and gloom, give hope. Doom and gloom, give some hope. And, you know, we see that. It's a very cyclical thing. That very straightforward, very to the point, but there was always hope. There was always a good message because we, you know, we talked about God. Okay, so just to get into this a little bit, talking about Ezekiel. So, and you, if you haven't been reading the first part of the book, so who was he the son of? Does anybody remember? It's a name you know you've read, but a weird... What? Buzzy. Yeah, very interesting. I had forgotten that. Son of Buzzy. And, of course, you know, we see that in the first three verses of the chapter here. It says, "Now it came to pass in the 30th year, in the fourth month, in the fifth day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river of Kibar, that the heavens were open, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth day of the month, which was in the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's captivity, the word of the Lord came expressly to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kibar, and the hand of the Lord was upon him there." So we get a little bit about him and the fact that he was the son of Buzi. Now, there are some who've said that Buzi was a priest. Well, I don't see that. I don't know that we read that, but that is, there's a lot of historical commentary that say that Buzi was a priest. Doesn't matter. We don't read that in the Bible. Either way, though, we read of, we know that Ezekiel was a priest and he was the son of Buzi. You know, we learn that Ezekiel's name means God will strengthen. So we know that, you know, that was, of course, you look at what Ezekiel went through. We know that that was the source of his his spiritual strength. We know that he was born sometime around 622 BC, which was, we just read, this would have been, of course, we've read before and we've read about that time period. That would have been the reign of a good king, which we didn't have many of, but that would have been around the time of Josiah's reign. And, you know, it's interesting, and I don't know, somebody may have some thoughts on this, but Ezekiel probably would have heard some of the things that Jeremiah preached about. He would have been young, but does anybody have any thoughts on that or anything that you've read? I mean, if you look at the time frame, the time period, it is very possible that he would have been during that time, which is kind of interesting. We've been, you know, speaking so much about Jeremiah and talking about him, but to think about Ezekiel hearing that. I don't know. I guess it's the same thing about Daniel. You know, would he have? He may have met Daniel, may have known Daniel, which is kind of interesting. I guess to think about all these kind of key people coming together, it's possible. You know, if we go to Ezekiel chapter 14, Ezekiel 14 and verse 14 says, though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they would deliver only themselves by their righteousness, says the Lord God. We go to verse 20. It says, even though Noah, Daniel, and Job were in it, as I live, says the Lord God, they would deliver neither son nor daughter. They would deliver only themselves by their righteousness. You know, pretty interesting comments there about those men. And it was an interesting time period. You know, of course, these young men would have been learning from God and some very interesting things, listening to messages from others that I just mentioned about God. Yeah.
The strange thing about that is, you think about the time frame that we're talking about, Daniel's alive. We know Daniel's alive at this time. And depending on when chapter 14 is written, Daniel is probably a young person too. He's probably not that old. And you think about who Daniel gets grouped with here. Mm-hmm. Daniel gets grouped with Noah and Job. Here, Daniel's not even
just
living
this young
time,
yeah.
You know? Which is interesting.
It is. Yeah, that's why I think those verses are pretty interesting about some of these instrumental people. That's a good point. Very young.
Another thing, when he says that even if these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they would deliver only themselves by the righteousness. Well, deliver them in what way? Doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going, because we know Daniel got sent off to be in captivity in Babylon. So when it says they will be delivered, I suspect he may be talking about their life spared. Okay, of course, we know Daniel was a righteous man. I think we can safely assume that he was going to heaven with God. But I just, the verse right before that says, when a land sins against me by persistent unfaithfulness, I will stretch out my hand against it, and I will cut off its supply of bread, send famine on it, and cut off man and beast from it. And of course, we know that there were thousands of people that were killed.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious if anybody else has any comment about in what way, when he says they will deliver them.
I think what it's saying there is, even if Job, Noah, and Daniel were living in the land of Israel, their righteousness would not be enough for God to spare the land. Mm. I think that's what it's saying. That God would still only save those three, and he'd still destroy the land.
So let me, in conjunction with that, you know, we talked about Jeremiah. How many people, we don't know the answer to this, but did Jeremiah sway a lot of people to do what God was wanting them to do? Did any of these people? You know, so I think there's a lesson for us, and that is, you know, we go back to that verse that tells us not to grow weary in well-doing. But look at what these guys were up against. Look what they did, and look how long that they taught, prophesied, warned, And how many people did they really? I mean, look at Noah.
Well,
and his family.
Jonah did.
Yeah, Jonah was one that had some success. But a lot of these guys didn't have great success. But that's a great reminder for us that that doesn't mean you stop. Did you see any of these men stop? You know, they stayed focused and did what God asked them to do, in spite of the fact that they had to feel like failures at times.
That's a good lesson for us today. When we see that the church is very small compared to other denominations and churches, that the numbers
doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
What matters is the true believers and those that are obedient.
Yeah. And you know, another point that Ben made, and I don't want to gloss over it, is you know, youthful, older, doesn't matter. We can all have impacts on people. And you know, to your point, you were saying, well, Daniel's probably very young here. These guys, at very young ages, had a big impact on people. Can you know? It's all relative who's young and who's not. But we all can have impacts. Whether you're 80 in the church and you're coming and you're faithful and you're encouraging others by the things you say and do and just being here, or you're 14 and you're encouraging. You know, there's modern day encouragement just like we read of here. Yeah, Dwayne.
Yeah, I think there in that 14th verse I thought was talking about and Ed was talking about. I think there may be some prophetic reference there to the fact that what we're dealing with back in the Old Testament with these prophets and teachers was a nation. The salvation of the nation.
Yeah.
I think this is looking forward to the new covenant where it's going to be individual.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is going to only be delivered by the righteousness of their own souls. I can't make you. You can't make me. You can't make anyone else. We can help one another, but it all depends on me.
You jumped ahead one page in my nose. That's good. You're exactly right. I mean, that's exactly the point that we're going to make later. And that's a good one. You just were ahead of us. So, let's see here. Now I've lost my own self here. Yes, please do. While I'm finding myself here. Yeah. Last statement is where I was just going to head, and that is today, can we be slaves to something? We're going to be slaves to someone, Satan, God, whoever, but like you said, that's been a constant, you know, from the beginning till now. It's a good point. Okay, in 2 Kings chapter 24, Ezekiel was taken into Babylon when he was a young person. Here in the 24th chapter, verses 14 through 16 says, "Also he carried into captivity all Jerusalem, all the captains and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives, all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land. And he carried Jehoiakim, captive of Babylon, the king's mother and the king's wives, his officers and the mighty of the land, and carried them into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. All the valiant men, 7,000 and craftsmen and smiths, 1,000, all who were strong and fit for war. These are the king... These the king of Babylon brought captive into Babylon. I just wanted to go back and read that verse. I had that and I overlooked it. His call to the prophet was in the land of the Chaldeans. Of course, we have that river Kibar mentioned there in Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 3. Does anybody know, was Ezekiel married?
Yes, he was.
Okay, he was, and she died, and that would have been about the final siege of Jerusalem when it began there. If we go to Ezekiel chapter 24, we can look at that. Ezekiel 24, verses 1 and 2, says, "Again in the ninth year, in the tenth month, of the tenth day of the month, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, write down the name of the day, this very day the king of Babylon started his siege against Jerusalem, this very day." And then we go and skip down to 15 through 18. It says, "Also the word of the Lord came to me, saying, The son of man, behold, I take away from you the desire of your eyes with one stroke. Yet you shall neither mourn nor weep, nor shall your tears run down. Sigh in silence, make no mournings for the dead. Bind your turban on your head and put your sandals on your feet. Do not cover your lips and do not eat man's bread of sorrow." So I spoke to the people in the morning and in the evening. In the morning and at evening, my wife died. And the next morning I did as I was commanded. So Jeremy, you're right. Lord told him not to mourn for his wife. And of course, this is about the time that this final siege was taking place. And she passed on. Go ahead.
Two questions here. Is Ezekiel written in a similar way to Jeremiah, where it doesn't follow chronological order?
I think so.
Okay, and then my second thing is, it sounds like this happens here in chapter 24. This happens in Jerusalem.
The
book starts with him in Babylon. Is that right?
Yeah, this did happen in the time of when Jerusalem, this final siege of when Jerusalem began. But yeah, I think you're right. We probably need a visual on that. But yeah, in Ezekiel, I know you're going to look at some more things and you can get back with us. But Ezekiel 3 and 15 says, "Then I came to the captives at Tel Aviv who dwelt by the river Kibar, and I sat where they sat and remained there astonished among them 7 days." This Tel Aviv, which just did a little looking at it, is about 60 miles south of the city of Babylon. And this river Kibar, it might have possibly been like a canal, if you read about it, the canal between the Tigris and Euphrates, just to kind of give you a little, time frame or area of where that would be. We know that Ezekiel was about 30 years of age when he was called to be a prophet. We read that in Ezekiel, first chapter. And then it talks about it was in the fifth year of the captivity. So, gives us a little bit of time frame, but he continued to prophesy until the 27th year of the captivity. So if you kind of do the math on that, that's a total of 22 years. We don't know, I don't know what happened to him after this, but there's speculation that he had died maybe at a young age, like in his 50s. So I don't know. I don't know that we know a lot about him, but if he prophesied for 22 years and he began somewhere around the age of 30 and then disappeared or died, he'd have been in his early 50s if that's what's really happened. We just don't know. This entire book revolves around the fall of Jerusalem, and we've got 48 chapters. If you kind of look at a synopsis of the book, it can be divided. You can divide that into two main sections. Chapters 1 through 24 talks about being delivered before the fall of Jerusalem, and then 24 through 48 would be after the fall of Jerusalem. I mean, there's two distinct time frames there. Any other comments or questions or thoughts about any of that?
Quick mention, just something just a minute ago about whether it's in chronological order or not. I'm not sure if it is or not. Because, you know, they didn't all leave Jerusalem at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, this siege in chapter 24 appears to be the start of the siege against Jerusalem, but I'm not so sure it was the first time.
It's not Mike.
Yeah, so I'm not.
Yeah, you're thinking it's not chronological.
You know, it took them 100 years to all come back. They didn't all leave on the same day either, so this may or may not have been chronological.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I didn't get the feeling it was, but
the other thing that makes this hard is that Ezekiel's counting time in two different ways. You know, in the first part of the book, he's talking about the same day. When in verse 1 he says it's the 30th year of the fourth month on the fifth day. And then in verse 2 when he says it's on the fifth day of the month in the fifth year of King Jehoiachin's captivity. Well, those are the same day.
Yeah.
But he's describing it, one based on Jehoiachin's captivity, and the other, I think it's
difficult.
When the Babylonian Empire started, I think is what he's using there. But anyway, he counts time differently. So then, here when he says it's the ninth year in verse 24, well, is it the ninth year of Jehoiachin's captivity? Because if it is, then it might be in chronological.
Right.
So, in the ninth year of Jehoiachin's captivity, was there a siege on Jerusalem? I mean, I guess we just have to find that out, and that would probably tell us the answer.
Some people think that 30th year is his age. That's why they say he was 30 when he started prophesying. The first one, the 30th year, they say that was his 30th.
And then if he prophesied for 22 years, that's why I was saying, that's why I was thinking 50s, 52, somewhere in there. Yep. Okay, we'll take a short break and we'll pick up there next week.